This is Tara Wilhelmy, your Tuesday morning host of the 8 o'clock Buzz. We love bringing you this eclectic blend of community, culture, and so much more. In return, we ask for some support through donations to the station. It's easy. Go to wartfm.org/donate. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening in.
All right, all right, all right. Top of the day. Got this beautiful January 24th. I am your host, Breon, a.k.a. One of Many, and I'm sitting here with the lovely
Tara Wilhelmy. Good morning, everybody.
Again, once again, top of the day to everybody out here. Welcome to crew right now, John Minor. Shout out to him. Shout out Kathy Minor. That's a big fact. The tea is very, very good this morning. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So let's just run over the show today.
We can't forget to say hey to Charlie because she's keeping us real slick.
That's a fact. I'm super sorry.
That's our producer.
Shout out Charlie on this one. Hold on. We're going to take a hot sip.
All right.
All right, so what we got lined up on the show is Dr. Charles Taylor. Can't wait to speak to you, good brother. It's always going to be a pleasure. I got Tara back here with me. She ain't duck out on me this morning, so we definitely going to have a great, great, good time. All right, so you got anything you want to add before we get into that?
No, let's just go. Good morning.
Top of the day, y'all. Let's get into the first record here. It's Number Love, and I got Number Love, but what you won't do, it's by Tupac Shakur. What you won't do or what you going to do? Talk to me.
Usually what I won't do. You know, I always know where I don't want to go eat, not where I want to go. So
that's
what I won't
do. That's a fact. All right, so let me know what you're going to do for love. Tupac Shakur. Love is always love, y'all. 89.9 Wart Radio. All right, all right. That was Tupac. What you won't do for love. All right, so just for the background of the 2000 babies, man. Tupac was also known by a stage name of Machiavelli, right? I was an American rapper. He was widely considered one of the most influential rappers of all time. Let Tara tell it, he is of all time.
He's definitely my favorite. I don't get into the who's the GOAT, kind of, you know, other than the who's the greatest rapper in the terrain. I don't know. That's me, y'all. I rap in the terrain, so.
Yeah, she really talk about her vehicle, and I think our last battle we had, I shut you down. Shout out.
I mean, you're a real rapper, so you know. And I don't even think I got in that battle, but okay. Anyway, back to the point.
That's the fact. That's the fact.
It blew my mind that you had to reference who Tupac was, though. That just
I had to.
To the 2000 babies. My babies all know Tupac.
When you got artists like 21 Savage saying artists like Nas is irrelevant. I think we
That's right.
Need to make a staple.
I will say though, a few rappers have been the Tupac of their age, so I feel like young folks do know Tupac, but that's deep when someone feels like Nas is irrelevant.
That's what I'm saying. So imagine if we didn't lose Tupac, who would be disrespecting his imprint on this space right now? I'm just saying.
Do y'all see the face?
Right. 75 million records sold worldwide. So if you ain't heard of Tupac, then you know what sales are. And if you don't, then Google it. All right, so at this point, I just want to let y'all know a little bit of background. Last week, Wart broadcast the 38th Madison Dane County King Holiday Observance live from the Overture Center. Among the musical performances, speakers was a presentation of this year's Humanitarian Award honoring Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. The late community leader Wayne Strong, who passed away last summer, was honored. So was our guest for today, Dr. Charles Taylor, who will be joining us in later. But first, let's take a listen to Dr. Taylor's acceptance speech from last week.
My name is Satya Rhodes Conway. I'm honored to be the mayor of the fantastic city of Madison. And I thank you. And I am really honored to be here tonight to have the chance to tell you about someone who is a visionary, who is creative, determined, an accomplished educator, and civil rights activist. Let me say at the outset, there is no way that I can tell you about all the accomplishments of Dr. Charles Taylor tonight. We'd be here all night. And I think we'd rather listen to the choir. He led a long, rich, and varied life. But I do want to highlight a few of his accomplishments. Dr. Taylor grew up in Missouri, where he marched during the Civil Rights Movement. He is highly educated with degrees from our own UW-Madison, the University of Oregon, and Southeast Missouri State University. He's an educator, a retired professor, and dean. He's the founder and president of Roar Enterprises, a consulting firm whose mission is to promote unity, cultural competency, and racial understanding. And these themes are part of Dr. Taylor's vision for a better world, a vision that I believe you can see woven throughout all of his work. Dr. Taylor's vision founded the AHANA Student Leadership Conference and trained several thousand Wisconsin high school students of color in leadership skills. Dr. Taylor's vision resulted in the Urban League's multi-million dollar building on South Park Street, and he was the recipient of their 2009 Visionary Award. And that building block has led to the next building that the Urban League is putting up on Park Street, the Black Business Hub. One would not have happened without the other. That's right. Dr. Taylor had a vision of Juneteenth as a national holiday, so he authored Juneteenth, a celebration of freedom, which was used in the movement to achieve national holiday status. And we did achieve that. We achieved it here in Madison and in Dane County and at the federal level. And most of Dr. Taylor's creative work is about the Black experience and improving the lives of all people. His vision produced award-winning documentaries. I think some of you may have seen at least one of them. TV shows, films, radio programs, and theater pieces. His vision led him to write over a dozen books, including two biographies and a highly acclaimed novel. Our community, indeed our world, has benefited greatly from Dr. Taylor's vision and the hard work that he's done, not just to dream, but to bring those dreams and that vision into reality. It is my great honor to present Dr. Charles Taylor with the 2023 Martin Luther King Jr. Humanitarian Award.
I wish I could moonwalk. I'd be moonwalking right about now. Thank you, Mayor, for that wonderful introduction. You know, this award is an incredible honor, and I'm grateful to be sharing it with you tonight. To Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway, County Exec Joe Parisi, and other distinguished guests, my documentary, Leaders of Madison's Black Renaissance, confirmed that there's something special about Madison. Would you agree with that? Miss Abernathy, I'm sure Dr. King and your father would be very proud to know that Dr. King has admirers working all over the city in Dane County, providing health care, jobs, education, and hope. Their passion and service taught me much about this community that we love, that despite our challenges, Madison is still a great place for big dreams. Help me thank my beautiful wife, Camilla, for all her inspiration and love. Would you please? I also want to thank my invited guests in attendance tonight for your long-standing support. Would you give them a round of applause, please? My generation was taught that despite racial barriers and our own personal flaws, that we could be successful. And when you combine faith with action, that great things are still possible. You know, I'd like to have a good time like anybody else, but I wanted my life to have meaning. And that's why the values that I learned growing up, hard work, faith, compassion, education, and kindness, have guided me all of my life. And I'm so glad this award came at the end of my career because it means so much more. And I hope that you have benefited from one of my books, films, or presentations because I've tried my best to give back to a community that has given so much to me. In fact, it's because of the amazing people in this room that I'm able to stand before you tonight, and I thank you. I didn't get here by myself. You know, I was once written up in the Wisconsin State Journal, and the reporter asked me, who is the one person you would most want to have dinner with, dead or alive? And I knew immediately that person had to be my mother. She died when I was 5 years old. And I went on to say that there would be so many things I'd like to tell her, and then just hold her for a while. And I can't tell you the number of Madisonians who said they cried when they read that and told me that I had touched them. Well, tonight, this Martin Luther King Award touches me, and it would be one of those things I would tell my mother. I would tell her that you've honored me more than you'll ever know with this great award. I would tell her there are certainly others more worthy, but none more grateful. I would tell her that this award is also for all those black and white voices who encouraged me and supported me growing up in Smelterville, the poorest side of Cape Girardeau, Missouri. It was Grandma who taught me to believe in myself and to never surrender my dreams. She would say, a light will shine anywhere, so Charles, let your light shine. And I would sing back to her, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. And lastly, I would tell my mother that although her son left home with only the clothes on his back, he didn't give up, and that he earned his PhD from UW-Madison, and the King Coalition is honoring him tonight. I graciously accept this award in the name of my mother, Inez Taylor. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much.
Welcome back. This Tuesday, 8 o'clock buzz. This is your host, Tara, and I'm joined with
Breon, a.k.a. One of Many.
Joining us for the rest of the hour is Dr. Charles Taylor, award-winning documentarian, author, professor, and founder of and president of Roar Enterprises. Dr. Taylor is a retired professor from the doctoral program at Edgewood College, where he also served as the dean of the business school. He's the producer behind several films and author of more than a dozen books, including the book used in the movement to make Juneteenth a national holiday, Juneteenth, a celebration of freedom. And he's extremely active in the community, founding the Students of Color Leadership Conference, which trains several thousand Wisconsin high school students to become future leaders, and the Diversity Institute on Wheels, as well as the Multicultural Student Retreat. For these and many more accomplishments, Dr. Taylor was honored last week with the Humanitarian Award from the King Coalition, or Commission, excuse me, and he joins us on the phone now. Good morning, Dr. Charles Taylor. Good morning, Dr. Taylor.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. It's amazing. I was blown away reading about lots of other things that you've been into, and I said to my co-host, this man is a powerhouse. And so thank you so much for spending some time here with us so we can learn a little bit more and share with the community a little bit more about what you've got going on and where you've been. It's been a real powerful and impactful road. So thank you. Thank you very much for what you've done and what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. So, Brian, you want to jump in with the first question about Juneteenth?
Oh, yeah. So, top of the morning here, Doctor. My name is Breon. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Breon. Glad to meet you.
Awesome, awesome. So, we did just listen to the speech. I want to say thank you for sharing this moment with us before we get to grilling you down with all these questions. So, I do got to thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. And I'm still glowing from that ceremony. That was quite an honor for me to receive, especially at the end of my career. So, it deeply touched me.
Okay, well, I'll have to duly note that part, the end of the career, because we're going to ride this one out. All right, so my first question is, what does Juneteenth mean to you, and how do you see it as being, like, received around the world, in your own words?
Well, Juneteenth, as you may or may not know, is June 19th. It started in 1865, and the enslaved blacks that were in Texas, they were among the last to know that they had been freed. But Juneteenth is more than just those enslaved people being free. It's the promise of freedom to all blacks. And unfortunately, we have not reached that goal yet. But because of Juneteenth, we know our history, and we know that we need to strive for a better America. The good thing about Juneteenth is Doc Meyer, people may or may not know who he is, but he sort of led the movement to make Juneteenth a national holiday, him with Miss Opal Lee and many other people around the country. But Doc would get in his truck and literally drive around the country to different capitals and meet with black leaders and meet with politicians and tried to make the case. And then when Doc and I, we met, I think it was maybe about in the mid-90s, 30-some years ago, in Milwaukee, in a black-owned restaurant. We were having lunch. We literally mapped out what it would take to make Juneteenth a national holiday. I said, Doc, I don't have the time or energy to go around to all these places, but if you do that, I will write a book. And so my contribution was to write a book. And then every time a state made Juneteenth a holiday or a state observance, Doc would give my book to the governor, also to their library. So that's how that was the role that I played. I did travel some with him, but I can never take the credit for all the hard work that he and his organization did to make this national holiday.
For sure, for sure. Thank you for that. Terry, you got anything you want to add?
No, I'll get to it. I'm going to let you ask the questions. I've got some thoughts I'm writing down, though.
Okay, okay. So I just want to skip over one because I want to lead the Black Madison Renaissance one for you.
Okay.
So after listening to this speech, where you reference, like, if you could sit down with anyone, you know, I'm an artist, I'm a rapper. Most people in my community, they would have said, like, a big famous artist or somebody like the first artist we played, Tupac Shakur. You referenced your mother, which I thought was pretty interesting and definitely heartfelt. So my next question was, like, based off, you know, your award-winning people honoring you, and you wanted to share that moment with your mom, what else would you tell your mother about your plans or your achievements moving forward throughout 2023?
Well, I would tell her that I've always kept her in my heart, and she has been my guiding light. So I'd start with that. And secondly, I tell her I'm not finished yet. I have another documentary that I'll be working on shortly, and I have probably one final book that I wanted to finish maybe this year as well. So I've got a couple of projects that I would work on. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because this award meant so much to me, but I think it would have meant a lot to her as well. And I just wanted to acknowledge to the public the influence on my life. That I'll be 73 next month, but even today she is still a guiding light for me.
For sure, for sure. Hey, as strong as a man you are, man, where would we be without women, our women, our mothers? So that's definitely heartfelt. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for asking.
For sure, for sure. So more like a fun question right here. Other than, like, you know, the life that we were given, what's some of the best gifts that you ever received? You sound like the giver, so that's why I'm asking, like, what do you give the giver?
My son. I'm so proud of my son. He lives in LA, and my wife and I are gonna go on a vacation next month, and we're gonna go visit him and some of her folks as well. But he is clearly a gift, and I remember when I had my heart surgery, he didn't even hesitate. I didn't even ask him. He took off work for 2 weeks and came to, you know, take care of his dad. But clearly him and family and friends, absolutely.
For sure, for sure. That's what's up, man. You sound like an amazing, amazing person to be around. Like, this? I didn't even write this down. I'm just feeling this one. Like, what's some of your hobbies? Like, what do you like to do? You say you're at the end of your career. Like, what's some of your hobbies?
Yeah. Well, obviously, I like to write because I love to write, you know, scripts for TV. And I even did Wart, the noon show back in the 90s. And so I've been in Madison now for over 40 years. So I've been here, but I used to play summer softball, but my wife and I, we try to walk at least, you know, once a day, a couple miles. Love to listen to music. And I, I'm a homebody, so I have to probably fess up to that. I'm not, you know, goes out a lot because I'm always busy. I'm always traveling. I'm always doing something. So when I get some free time, I like to spend it at home. But I do have a few hobbies. And most of them are around writing, I guess.
For sure, for sure. I just want to double back on what you said about whenever states introduce Juneteenth as like a national or federal thing they want to recognize, a lot of individuals receive your book in the government spaces. So like, you may not accept this or you may not receive this, but I view you as a template to our culture. So what I would say in question to that is, what is the Black plan in your perspective for 2023 and beyond?
I wish I had the answer to that. I'd probably really be able to retire, but I can speak to my plan. Yes. And my plan is try to make people aware of the issues. And I think, you know, I'm a strong believer in education, and I think education, if you pick it out for a lot of young people, it's basketball, it's not sports, and I know you love rap.
I do.
Not even rap, but I think education is the ticket out. And so my plan is to get people aware of their history, because I have a feeling if people were aware of Black history, mm-hmm. And the contributions that we've made to human history, they would have a completely different attitude about Black people, because we come from kings and queens. And I don't say that flippantly. I say that based on research and study. And I think people, once they learn the true history, one clear fact comes to mind, at least to my mind, is that we're all connected because we all come from the same place. And so that is my mission, is to make people more aware of our history and our interconnectedness as human beings.
For sure, for sure.
Dr. Taylor, listening to you, this is Tara again. I've been kind of contemplating this question. So last year, February, I was able to come to your premiere of the documentary Leaders of Madison Black Renaissance. Yes. In preparing for today, I see that you're celebrating the anniversary by screening the movie, the documentary, at the Beloit International Film Festival. It looks like right on that same night, February 26th, and then again in March. But what I want to know is, so I'm looking at even your previous documentary of Decade of Discontent in Milwaukee, and I'm swirling with thoughts of how we're still fighting the same fights. And I know that echoes back past even your history. And then what you just said about really that idea of Sankofa and realizing our history, I think that even at the level that you were saying of knowing our history, our historical roots, even in Africa as a diaspora, I also think how much we need to know more about our local and regional and more contemporary history, because so much of the things that you've done, right, thinking about in the 80s and 90s, the MP, Multicultural Publishers Exchange, and the excitement that even my partner here, Breon, has about those same concepts, and thinking about how much we search now to find and connect to Black literature. And it's much easier. It's the age of the Wi-Fi. But to get to my question, there's all this resilience in our community. And last year, I was so tired of hearing about resilience, because my resilience came from trauma and fighting and having to be resilient, right? And I didn't feel like it was a badge of honor. I felt like it was a chain around my neck. And I just wanted to be free of it. I wanted to be liberated and not resilient. I wanted to be strong and not resilient. And so I say all that to say this idea of still fighting the same fight. How do you keep your energy? Because I'm younger than you. You're my elder, and you've seen and been in it longer. And if I'm feeling this way, how do you keep your energy going to keep giving so much to us?
Well, because I've studied history, and I know even though we're in a difficult time, it's still a small portion of history. And it's also an attitude. My attitude is that this is a lifelong, not only my life, but unfortunately my son's life and probably my grandson's life. So it's a continuing struggle. All we did was pick up the baton, and we do what we can while we're alive, and then we pass that on to the next generation. Until humanity sort of figures it out. We haven't figured it out yet, you know, that we're all connected. We still haven't figured that out. We have all our tribes based on religion, based on race, based on gender, you name it. We have it. So until we figure that one out, we're going to have this constant struggle. And then when you add the concept of white supremacy to the mix, then that adds another layer of barriers that we have to deal with. And so to me, it still is related to education. And if we can reach people early on, even in elementary school, and then reinforce those lessons throughout life, there's not going to be an easy off ramp. I wish there were. I would have taken it a long time ago. But there's no off ramp. But there is an attitude that you can obtain that says I'm in it for the long haul, and while I'm in it, I'm going to enjoy the journey. So it may not be just about the destination. It may, the lessons that we need to learn in life may also be about the journey.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. So going right along that lines, what advice would you have to people who are upcoming leaders and organizers and artists expressing these issues and highlighting these needs in our community? What would be your advice to them?
Yeah, don't give up. Own your craft. Learn as much about your craft as you can. And if you get opportunities to present, whether you're a spoken word artist, whether you're a visual artist, whatever type of artist you may be, always take advantage of the opportunity to do that. One of the things that I'm proud of is I've given people platforms to do that, whether it's in films or whether it's in other media or whether it's in conferences that we've sponsored in the past. But always take advantage of the opportunities to showcase your talent, because you never know who you touch with your talent.
Now, on the other side of that, I think about, I do a little diversity, equity consulting in spaces, and in the group of us, we talk a lot about how the people who show up, it's like singing to the choir, and the people who most need to be there are resistant, angry, or don't show up. And I'm thinking like in professional settings. And so on the flip side, what's your advice to those folks who aren't buying it, who think, you know, all lives matter, that, you know, racism is, we're post-racism because we had President Obama in office. Folks who are not necessarily proud bearers, right, of white supremacy, but yet they carry that cloak, right? What is your advice to those folks or your words?
No revolution ever had the majority of people, none in history. So, you know, just sort of set that to the side. Matter of fact, it only takes about 15% of the population to pull off a revolution. That's why the Republicans are doing so well in Congress. 8% holds up the whole country. Mm-hmm. So you never need the majority, but the people that do show up, you need to reinforce them and tell them that you appreciate them coming out and that you are with them and that together you will bring about some change. But if you're waiting on the majority to get behind you, you've got a long wait. But a small group can influence a whole city, and one person can make a difference. So never think that you can't make a difference. Just keep pushing.
Thank you for that. That resonates. That definitely resonates. This year I said I don't have energy for the people who don't believe me, just the ones that's with it. So that was my version of you, what you just stated so eloquently. So I want to switch gears a little away from, we talked about Juneteenth, but my first entry point into really being familiar with you is Kwanzaa and your book about Kwanzaa. A couple years ago, you gifted one of our celebrations with some of your books, and I was introduced to you through Dr. Corinda, really? Did I just fit? Okay.
Go crazy.
Oh, Dr. Corinda, you're going to get me. But yes, but through Dr. Corinda. And so
go ahead, I'm sorry.
So the question is, tell us a little bit about what brought you to Kwanzaa, how you're feeling about it now as far as in the community, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit of an experience that we had this year with Kwanzaa and see what you think about that. So just your thoughts about Kwanzaa.
Sure. Kwanzaa is a great cultural holiday that sort of highlights the not only the struggles that Black people have had to endure on the planet, but also their contributions. And my book was a family project, again, about 30, 40 years ago. My son did the artwork, and my daughter-in-law at that time wrote it, and I edited it and published it. And the book received wide distribution throughout the U.S. It was on the BET, the Black Entertainment Channel. It was in all the major newspapers around the country. So it received a great deal of praise. But we wanted to put together a book that will enable people across the country to not only understand Kwanzaa, but to learn how to celebrate it step by step. So that was the intent. And fortunately, it did serve that purpose. And people still use that book. I've made it into a smaller size now. And it's available on Amazon. But Kwanzaa is clearly a cultural holiday to strengthen the Black community. But anybody can celebrate it, but it's Black-oriented, and the purpose is to highlight the contributions of Blacks have made.
Super dope.
So now, when I found Kwanzaa, the principles really rang true with me. I feel like if we use this as a foundational piece, right, and we think about it all year, while that's not one silver bullet, there's answers there. There's a code, if you will, into how we can look to move forward. And so since I found it about 5 years ago, I've kept those principles near me. I've brought this to my sphere of influence. And I had the honor of being able to kind of pinch hit a little on Miss Edith Hilliard's event that she's had so many years. And we've morphed into something from her inspiration where we're coming together every day. We call it Citywide Kwanzaa. And we're talking about each principle, and we talk about what it means, but also how do we move into the next year honoring and practicing that principle. And this last year, I had to pass facilitating and leadership to Breon, which he stepped up to. Shout
talk
out to
about
you,
it,
right?
Talk about it.
But I had to because I got caught in this emotional political space where there was, I've been aware of the founder, Dr. Karenga. I've been aware of political things with his organization and the Black Panthers and different things. But this year, I was told about some real disturbing information about ways that he was treating some of the women and that there was a lawsuit or a criminal action that had to do with torturing some members. And we talked about it in the space, and everybody had different perspectives. And one of the perspectives was given to me is that you can't fault the source of the knowledge if the knowledge is strong. But then also another idea that was shared with me is the idea that we have to stop promoting those in our community who do bad, who do wrong, just because they're in our community. We don't want to further take down from the inside Black folks. And so it left me in a bit of a swirl of feelings, and Breon stepped in and was able to facilitate and guide it as I made my way through those feelings. And I'm just wondering if you have heard these things and have any thoughts or words of wisdom to those of us who struggle with digging into this because of those things.
Yeah, of course, I've heard about those over the years. And I think the first thing before you believe anything about anybody is try to do as much research on your own as you can and then make your decision. He refuted many of those things at least a decade ago, and he had documentation and all of that. And I don't know whether that was true or not. So I didn't come down on a particular side after I heard his presentation, but I think the jury is still out, and it also matters what he's done since then. It matters the life he's led since those accusations. But he said the FBI, according to him, planted all that negative information. They wanted him to spy on the Black Panthers. He refused to do so, and all of that. So I haven't had the time to sort all that out. So I really can't answer it definitively. But I do want to say something about Edith, who along with Dana and the late Malele, they used to sponsor Kwanzaa celebrations locally every year, and they would invite me to do presentations from time to time. And I did a presentation for Edith, and it wasn't my A game, and she gave me a small honorarium. And I know she doesn't want me telling this story over there, but I sent the money back to her because I didn't think that I gave it my best shot. She said it was just fine, but you know, I know when you've done something halfway decent. And so I remember that when you mentioned her name, it sort of brought back that memory.
Oh man, that's honorable right there.
Well, and I'm sure that she, and Miss Eddie, this is a treasure. She's a gem, and so I'm sure she handled that most graciously. And definitely is probably, when she finds out we're talking about it, won't be very happy with you. But she'll get, you know, it'll be a light. It'll be one of those light looks.
Well, I got a question for that. How far away were you from your retirement when you gave them funds back?
Yeah, I still had at least 7 or 8 more years to work. So.
Oh, yeah. I'd have sent her a nice little gift, but I'd have kept them coins.
You're a mess.
I hear you.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I do got a question I did want to ask about the acceptance speech again, because I heard you thank your team a lot, and I think that's definitely a big deal. But I would like to know, like, who was the people who gave you, like, your first, like, notable opportunities in your rise?
Well, to Madison, I say my uncle, Uncle Ed Spicer. He's been dead for a while, but my cousin Buster brought me to visit my Uncle Eddie. Back in, this is going to age me again, but back in 1973, and my Uncle Eddie worked for the University of Wisconsin system. Back then, it wasn't a system. They were just getting ready to create systems with all these different universities. And so I came up here to visit when I fell in love with the city, and he got me a job because he, you know, sort of knew everybody in the community back then. And he helped people get in college all over the state. But by visiting him, he helped me get a job. The first job I got was in Janesville, believe it or not. Here I am, the only black person in town in Janesville. And I was working at a job service. You know, when people are looking for jobs, they come in.
The temp
agency?
Yeah.
And I
think we lost.
Jobs that I'm helping people find. And so that was quite an experience. But fortunately, I didn't have to stay in Janesville too long, and a job at UW-Madison in the financial aid office opened up, and I worked there for a couple of years before I left. I left Madison and came back in 1980 and have been here ever since. But there have been people all along. I was invited to give a keynote speech at my hometown a couple of years ago, and I acknowledged so many people in my hometown that made a difference, black and white and men and women and friends of mine, and so when you ask that question, there are so many people that have helped me, and I guess that's one of the reasons that I try to help as many people as I can, because I know without the help that I received, I certainly wouldn't be in the position that I'm in today. So thank you for the question.
Sure, thank you for asking. I mean, thank you for answering. Also, you referenced about like some family in there. So would you say like this was like your path, or would you say like your career was along the lines of your path? You know, they say like the day you find what you're passionate about, you'll never work again. Is that, would that sum up your career for you? Would you say so?
I would say all the documentary work and the book, that stuff I love, so I don't really think of it as a job. But I went to school to be a historian, and when I came to Madison, that sort of disrupted my education. So I left Madison, and I went to, I got my master's at the University of Oregon in Eugene, and then I went back home to Missouri. And then when my father died, I moved to Oshkosh. I worked up there, and then I came from Oshkosh back to Madison in 1980. And it was always between education and entrepreneurship, because I've always had some kind of business on the side. It's always been related to publishing, consulting, education, diversity. So that has sort of been my life. And none of that, even today, is work to me. That's why I can still do these things, whether it's a book or a film or a presentation, because it's who I am. It's what I believe.
That's a fact. Well, you're definitely a friend of the show. We hope that we can walk in the footsteps that you laid for us, even being here on work at one point as well. So this has definitely been informative and fun for myself. I can't speak for Tara because she's very well spoken, so I would never even try to speak for Tara. So how would you sum this up before I close it out, Tara? How was your experience of speaking to the doctor?
Absolutely an honor. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. And honestly, I hope we can have you come back, or I can find time in my personal life to go to one of your presentations and follow you, because you've got so much knowledge. And then I deeply appreciate being able to stand on your shoulders, sir. Thank you so much for what you're doing, what you've done, and what there is to still come. And thank you for being with us this morning.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Thank you so much for honoring me.
For sure. So we're almost at the end of our show. Author, professor, producer, community leader, Dr. Charles Taylor has been our guest this hour. Dr. Taylor, thank you so much for making the time to join us this a.m. Enjoy yourself. Watch out. All right, so I do want to thank our guest of the show again. Oh, my goodness, Dr. Chuck Taylor. Man, I don't know what y'all got out of it, but I got a whole lot of notes that we got to follow back up with. So at this point, I got to thank you all for joining us. Thank you to the crew, John Miner, Kathy Miner, Tara Wilhelmy. Of course, she's the dopest. We got Charlie back there doing her thing. You are listening to Community Radio, WORT, Madison. Thank you all so much for hanging out with us. This has been a good time. Tara, talk your stuff to them.
Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your day. See you next week.